We've got folks from the state of Alaska health world and also the processing industry. Also, we've got online local government folks, Dan O'Hara, Alice Ruby, mayors of the region, and we are calling in today to talk about the COVID-19 and the plans for the fishery upcoming here in Bristol Bay. So if we can go ahead and introduce the guests here, I'm available for questions, of course, but we're going to be answering questions a little bit later in the conversation. First and foremost, we want to perhaps ask folks that are present today to let us know what they've been doing and how they're approaching the situation at hand. So if I can maybe ask Mayor O'Hara to kick it off, the Bristol Bay Borough is home of at least a dozen processors, and they've been working pretty hard on a plan to move forward here. So, Dan, if I can ask you to jump in, please do so now.
Yes, Nathan, thank you very much. It's Mayor O'Hara, and to our guests today, all the way from Bethel to Kodiak and down to Perryville, places like that. So good to have everyone on board. We have coming through the Bristol Bay Borough on a normal year about 14,000 people, and Nathan, a couple of thousand of them go to your district, and then we have the remaining 12,000 here in Naknek. So it's a massive influx of people, and so we are planning. We got interesting word today that Samaritan's Purse Franklin Graham is poised and ready to come in if we need him here. That is really good news for us. 25-bed tent, and and, of course, yesterday, Nathan, a very good contact with the governor's office, Ben Stevens, and, you know, for Dillingham and Lake and Penn and Bristol Bay Borough, the security team to come in and how that they can bring some of their people in who might be able to help us with corralling, especially the fishermen. The processors seem to be coming into play and going right to the locations and carrying out their plans, and 10 processors, and we have 10 plans as well. And and so those are some good things. It's going to be a real challenge to be able to handle this system, but it's off for a start. Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you, Dan. I also recognize that Mayor Ruby is on the conference and would like to give you the opportunity to give us an update on what you've got going on. Alice, please, if you would.
Yeah, thank you, Nathan. This is Alice Ruby for the City of Dillingham, and I want to say first I really appreciate Lake and Penn organizing the call-in and hosting it and doing all the work to set it up, and really appreciate everyone taking time to participate. It's great to get information out there. So the City of Dillingham is, we're working daily, every day, as things change and as things are moving fast, to prepare for the upcoming season. And as many people know, early on, Dillingham adopted an emergency ordinance, which declared an emergency in our community. And as part of that, we established a permit system, and we've been kind of managing that for the last month or so. It's been complicated, and there's been lots of things that needed to be streamlined and worked out. But we are doing that, and it'll actually come to the council tonight to consider, again, extending that and making revisions that have been recommended by the staff. The permit system that was established really was to help Dillingham get just a handle on just the movement into and through the community. It has been complicated. Residents have had some difficulties, and we'll work those out. One of the real advantages to that is we have been able to get, kind of information on when large groups are moving through and where they're moving to. it's helped us to maintain the mandatory quarantine for folks. And in a lot of cases, people just aren't aware of when quarantine is necessary. And so this has been really helpful for that. Again, not without challenges. In the meantime, we're still moving forward with other plans for the region, for the community, I should say, not the region, but, you know, the rules that will be in place for the boat harbor and the dock for the season, those continue to evolve as well. Some of the other services the city provides, the library or senior center, services like that, we've had to really limit those so that we limit exposure to really populations that are more vulnerable. But we're working through it. And, you know, examples of the library is not open to the public, but people can contact the library to check out books. And they made the internet accessible, you know, from outside the building. And things like that. There's senior meals being delivered to our seniors daily. So, you know, we're adapting and really appreciate the public's cooperation. The city also set up some specific email addresses and a website where you can get information not only on COVID in general, but on, you know, the city's system, an email address where people can send messages with recommendations and suggestions and so on. And otherwise, I appreciate everybody's cooperation. It has been a complicated month, and I know we can all make it through as long as we're all just kind of taking care of each other. Thanks, Nathan.
Thank you, Alice. I really appreciate that, and hope everybody understands that this has, of course, been fast-moving. And the purpose for this communication and broadcast is to share our concerns with the public and to also educate people and to let them know that there is work that is being done. And State of Alaska and all of the municipal governments are in touch with each other, and we are working on a plan. So it is, you know, like I said, fast moving. We also have online Adam Crum from, he's the commissioner for DHSS with the State of Alaska. And I'd like to give him the floor right now to let us know the current status and plan to move forward. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for that, Nathan. Yeah, this is Commissioner Crum with the Department of Health and Social Services for the State of Alaska. Appreciate the opportunity to get on here today and talk. Just to let the public know what we've been working on. We've had some very robust conversations working with local leadership. So I appreciate the time that Mayor Ruby, Mayor O'Hara, and Nathan with Lake and Pembroke have given myself and Chief of Staff as we talk out specific concerns. And we're really working directly, trying to get the local elected leadership, working with the local emergency operations centers, so the EOCs, their coordination with the state EOC, and our direct contact with local clinics in the area to see, like, what is the health capacity, what do they need, and how can we can support them moving forward in this. One aspect is we work, you know, particularly with our federal partners, is really trying to educate them on what not only commercial fishing is in Alaska, but the size and scope of it. And it's kind of amazing when you talk to somebody back in D.C., we say about, you know, fishermen coming in, they think we're talking about fly fishing, and they don't understand we're talking influx of tens of thousands of people to different regions of the state. And by when we say the word region, when you talk about the Bristol Bay region, that's as big as like the eastern seaboard of the United States, the size of it. And so really getting them to understand that. So we've been able to impress upon our federal partners how critical it is that not only we protect the local population, but also what this fishery means to our general food supply. It's we want to make sure we protect that. So we've gotten some tremendous progress. So Admiral Girard, he is the Assistant Secretary for Health for Federal Health and Human Services. He has been on the phone probably 8 times in the last week with Dr. Zink, our Chief Medical Officer, because from the White House perspective, the goal is how do you protect rural Alaska and how do you actually work to make sure that the fishery can occur safely for the communities. And we have been successful, and we are getting in multiple different testing machines. These are different than the Abbott ID analysis. They're a little bit bigger throughput, and we're working on where we can actually put those in region to see if there is anything we can identify possible cases and clusters much faster, getting the testing cases and testing kits and capability in place, as well as what are the definitions of quarantine and how we can work with the processors, the fishing fleets, as well as the independent fishing vessels to make sure we're doing this in the safest way possible. So this is a high priority there. We've been able to have some good conversations with the feds, get these actual resources in place. Another aspect that, you know, we've come to agreement on is, you know, we've got Mandate 17, which has to deal with the independent fishing vessels and what that requires. You know, it's acknowledgments from the captain of the vessel, what his crew is going to do, certain protocols they have to take, as well as the acknowledgment form that they must turn into a processor or a tender prior to even a sale taking place. You know, and how do we deal with some of these enforcement issues? So yesterday, we came to an agreement with the local leadership that from a state perspective, we are going to provide the resources. We are going to get a contracting company that provides security service to go do an assessment as soon as possible out in the Bristol Bay region about different areas, points of concern, and or checkpoints, and then put together a plan. This is something the state would find the money to pay for, to actually have security forces in region, just to make sure that the whole industry is doing what they're supposed to do, protecting the community, not having undue mixing, and that you know, we can have a safe fishery, which is critical to Alaska and the world's food supply, as well as making sure the communities are safe and protected and they have the support they need. So this is a really high aspect. This is myself and the chief of staff working on this directly, along with all of our other teams. On the phone, I also have my director of public health, Heidi Hedberg. She's actually one of the incident commanders at the State Unified Command. She's been taking a proactive approach, and she's worked directly with the local health clinics. And one of them I'd like to share some information a little bit, and that would be Mary Swain with the CAMI Health Clinic, if she could. Nathan?
Thank you, Commissioner. Much appreciated. And Mary, if you're online, be welcome to listen to what you've got to say and expand on what the commissioner has just said. Thank you.
Absolutely. First, I want to thank Nathan for putting this together and Kate for sending me the information so that I could get on the call this morning. I have been working pretty closely the last 24 hours with the state and Heidi in particular. One of the big questions, of course, as we hear the new mandates and we hear testing in the news, and everybody should be tested, and we really want to identify testing, or excuse me, identify clusters before they become a big outbreak, is testing. And testing is the key to it all, I think. So we have been working with Heidi, and it sounds like we are going to be opening up our own testing site here in Naknek. It's going to be off-site from the clinic, but it's going to be very close to the clinic. As we work those processes out, we'll have more information about that. But we will be doing testing of the magnitudes if we need to, and however that needs to happen. We also are bringing in, and it'll be here by the end of the month, a quarantine area that will be, that the clinic will be able to identify those people that are still kind of at risk but maybe haven't tested positive, but we really need to keep a watch on them, or we need to retest them because we're not quite sure that the test came back accurately. So we're working that avenue also. That should probably be here, like I said, it'll be here about the end of the month. We are working also in preparations as to what does a season look like? How are we going to triage patients? What are we doing? We have additional staff that we've already hired for the season. We will be doing telehealth a lot this season. We've done that in previous years on a more limited capacity, but this year we're broadening that. That means if somebody on a fishing boat needs to get in touch with somebody in the medical community, we will have people specifically that they can call and have an appointment with, and they'll be able to talk to them on their phone, via FaceTime, Zoom, whatever avenue they have available to them, so that we can identify people that are sick quickly and get them the treatment that they need. We are also working with our Medevac partners, and how that works is locally, if somebody is identified as needing a medevac, they would come through the clinic, either through EMS or through our clinic specifically. We know there is a lot of questions about medevacs, and I just want to assure everybody that it works very well. The system works very well. We have availability for multiple ways of getting people out. If we need to get out two people, we can call our normal lines. If we need to get out four or five people, then we will be calling incident command saying we need bigger help, and then they would be able to help through their partners such as the National Guard, the military, the Coast Guard, whatever that looks like. They will be able to handle that for us. We're working very closely with them so that we can make sure that that happens. We are, as most people know, we do have two clinics in the summertime. We have our main clinic, and then we open up another one in the Leader Creek area. That one is typically open 6 weeks a year, or 6 weeks of the season. We're going to open that for the entire month of June and July. We have segregated a specific room that is just respiratory issues in this clinic. And that clinic, we've done the same thing. There's two rooms in there. One will be a respiratory-only room, and one will be a room for somebody that has a rash or just maybe their hand hurts or something like that. So we're working on both of those, and in both facilities we'll have the ability to test. So I think we're working on the right things, but as questions come up and ideas are brought to us, we will look at all of them and incorporate whatever we need to do. Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you, Mary. And just to add that Mary is working with the Chimay Clinic, and she's the executive director there. And first and foremost here, we like to hear from the health officials and plans to move forward. And we've got Heidi Herbert online, and I wanted to give her an opportunity to add to Mary's comments if she had some things to say.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. This is Heidi Hedberg. And so I just want to thank Mary for all of the work and planning that has gone into what she just presented. It's been a lot of conversations that truly has evolved over the last 24 hours. I see my job as really working with the hospital in Dillingham, working with the clinics to say, where are you at? What do you need? How can I help? How can we support? And that's really the role that we have. And so it's through those conversations, and as Nathan, I think you mentioned before, everything is very fluid. Everything is changing as we are learning a lot of lessons from other countries, from the lower 48. CDC is presenting more information on how to effectively respond to COVID. So with that, I just want to share that we have been, Unified Command has been working with the fishing industry on their plans and making sure that those plans are shared with the communities, which they are being shared, and those continuing those conversations and how they link in with the Mandate 17. In addition, working with the clinics and hospitals on how they can surge internally and then how they can set up alternate care sites. And then finally, looking at this patient movement and how can we safely transport people out of that region. And again, Mary acknowledged, all patient movement goes through the clinic, and we're using those private medevac resources. And when they are exhausted, that's when we kick it over to the National Guard and the Coast Guard. And I'm very thankful for our National Guard partners because Colonel Bob Kurtz has been working with all of the private medevac companies to understand their capacity, their schedule, making sure that we understand who is transporting in which of these regions. They've been exercising so that they can safely transport these COVID patients. And it's the one, it's the two, and then what if we have to transport 5, 10, or much larger numbers? How can we safely do that and bring those individuals safely into Anchorage for higher levels of care, or to, if they're a mild case, how can they recover safely in an isolated area? So a lot of those conversations have been happening in addition to those exercises and really trying to try on that PPE when you're in that Black Hawk, and how does that work? The other area that I just wanted to bring up is whenever there is a positive case, we engage in contact investigation. And that's where it's a very in-depth discussion with that individual that starts with 2 days before symptoms started, where were you? And tracking every minute of the day up until their diagnosis came back as positive. And who did they come in contact with? And that's where Dr. Anzi and Kev shared, if you come in contact with somebody within 10 feet for more than 10 minutes, we want to make sure that we reach out to you and that you are aware and that we can get you tested. And so that contact tracing is really important. It's one of those strategies so that we can really contain this virus and keep everyone safe. And that's where we look to public health nursing, because they're one of that workforce that can really help and support with that contact tracing. We also work with the provider that provided that test. We also work with state epidemiology. I mean, there's many folks that we can train in contact investigation. So with that, I will transition it over to Judy. She's with public health nursing, and she can talk about what public health nursing does and contact tracing.
Judy, thank you, Heidi, for that input. And I just wanted to add that Judy Hollander, who's the public health nurse, has been a great asset to the progress of the information being passed along to all of our villages and cities in the region. And as time marches on here, we've been really lucky to have her on board. So, Judy, please, appreciate your presence.
Oh, thank you, Nathan. And thanks to you and Kate for, in such a quick manner, getting this all together. And thanks, Heidi, for that segue. The public health nursing has jumped to the answered the call to do contact tracing. So our nurses are making these calls. Calls to a positive case can take an hour to an hour and a half to follow on that person plus all their contacts. And that's only one of the things we're doing. But as well as that, we are continuing our work in communities. We are, as public health nurses, we are working together to help the communities find solutions to problems by networking, opening communication channels which may be stuck within a community, and also helping with decision making. And this has come into play a lot with these small community emergency response plans called SCRPs, and also the emergency operating committees. We're trying to get that set up in every community so people know what to do in the event of a crisis. And this is, people are really stepping to the fore in the communities and helping out. And as public health nurses, we go in and facilitate these discussions, because sometimes it's hard to do it without another person in there. Plus, we're committed. I'm a traveling public health nurse, and I go into the upper Bristol Bay communities, and I get to know the people individually, so we develop trust, and I feel as part of what's going on there as they do, even though I'm living outside in Anchorage. Another thing that public health nursing does is we have public health centers throughout the state in larger communities. One that is a specific interest to the Bristol Bay region is our public health center in Dillingham. And I wanted to let you know that we are increasing our staff throughout. And just now we've also hired another public health nurse to work at that center to help the community, to help facilitate discussions, to help with off-site testing for those in need. And, following on with whatever needs we can. And our position is one of service, and we're here to help in any way. So call your public health center or your itinerant nurse if you need us. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Also online with us today is Bryce Edgman. He's representative for the region and also Speaker of the House in Juneau. I'd like to welcome some of Bryce's comments and also add that Bryce has been, of course, an integral part of a lot of these conversations and connecting folks in the region. So thank you for attending, Bryce, and I'd like to give you the opportunity to speak now.
Good morning, Nathan. Hopefully I'm coming across loud and clear. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine, Bryce. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. A couple of things I'd like to touch upon. One is that the legislature and the executive branch is working through the plans to distribute essentially $1.25 billion to a number of entities throughout the state, including communities. And hopefully some of that money will get out to the fisheries sector. We're not quite sure yet if it'll be this round of the CARES Act or it'll be the second sort of tier of money that's coming into the state that was signed by the president about a week ago or so. What we're discovering, and as we speak, there's a House Finance hearing that's hearing from municipalities around the state. I think the Bristol Bay Borough will also be calling in on that meeting. But what we're hearing relative to the money that gets out to communities, you know, that portion of the $1.25 billion, is that more guidance is needed, more sort of leeway to communities is necessary in order for communities to provide for essentially lost revenues from any tax monies or any other sort of sources of revenues that will be impacted throughout the upcoming season, and as well to pay back school bond debt reimbursement payments, community assistance monies, things like that that were vetoed in the budget that the legislature passed and the governor signed into law. Point number two I'd like to make is that I've been in regular conversations with Alaska Airlines, and their plan is to provide service to Bristol Bay as soon as they can get access to the King Salmon and Dillingham terminals. Both of the terminals at this point are, as I understand it, basically in a bankruptcy court. And so Alaska Airlines is doing everything possible to get, you know, get a lease in place for the two facilities, which would enable them to, you know, bring service out in a very short order. Some of you may know, but maybe many of you don't. And I think this is good news for sure, that Alaska Airlines is also planning year-round service to Bristol Bay. And I got approval to put that out on the air. So that's the full intentions of Alaska Airlines at this point. I think I'd close by saying that, you know, even though I'm not able to be back in the region, I've had a number of calls from people scattered throughout Bristol Bay, east and west side, and so forth. And you know, we all know the upcoming season is going to be extremely challenging. There are some who want the fishery to be shut down, period. There are others who want to take a more cautious approach. There, you know, certainly are some who think the fishery can be pulled off in a way that the safeguards are in place. I've been doing my best to work with everyone. And as Nathan mentioned, at the start, working really trying to connect the mayors and others with the governor's office. And I'm very appreciative that the commissioner is online today and that the chief of staff and Dr. Zink have availed themselves to leaders in Bristol Bay. And, you know, the conversations, the efforts, I think, have been very productive to date, and I hope they continue. And with that, Nathan, I'll be standing by. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Edgman. I appreciate the commentary, and just want to say it's been a pleasure, of course, working with you and the other folks to carve a path forward here. Also, online, we've got Fritz Johnson, who's coordinating on behalf of Bristol Bay Fishermen. I'd like to hear from Fritz, if you can jump on right now.
Yes, Nathan, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm the current chair of the BBRSDA, the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, and our connection is to the fleet. Given the situation this year, although we are supported primarily by the drift fleet, we are extending our efforts to the set net fleet as well. We're primarily a marketing association, but we also do work in habitat protection and fish quality, but with a great emphasis on marketing. But since early March, really, we created a 20-member work group to deal with the various issues that we're facing here. And we did come up with a list of ideas, recommendations for prosecuting the fishery safely. It's important to remember that we have no legal authority, but we have been working, we can't mandate like the state, but we've been working with the state processors and local communities to try to come up with recommendations that need to be addressed. And it's important to remember, we represent, in excess of 1,800 permit holders and 900 set netters, and we are including set netters in our work. Some of the products that we've, come up with at this point include quarantine flags and all clear flags, which are mandated by the Coast Guard, and I'm pretty sure are included in the state mandate 17. We're providing face masks, discounts on medevac services to the fleet, and we're seeking out, personal protection equipment to distribute to the fleet. I think the biggest function that we have, in addition to support for the recommendations that have been made, is our communication link to the fleet, and it's extremely important that when the fleet is here, that they understand that we all need to be involved in this effort. We can't emphasize enough that this is critical. In addition to for a number of reasons, the RSBA's its mission is to increase the value of the fishery, for our members, for the fishing fleet itself, of great concern, in addition to public health, is the idea that should things turn badly here, that the reputation of Bristol Bay salmon is going to be sullied for a long time. I kind of think of this as, you look at what happened in New Orleans when Mardi Gras proceeded, with 14 or 15,000 people showing up here. We're essentially on the edge of our own Mardi Gras here. So we're taking this work extremely seriously. If anyone has any questions, I'm happy to provide an answer, what answers that I know. Someone made the point earlier that, there are, things change almost daily in this. We're grateful that the state is, has made contacts with the federal administration for testing equipment. Another question that arose this morning from, the city of Dillingham is, and this speaks to the need for, enforcement and doing the best we can to plug all the leaks here, but what happens if a crewman is fired and dropped off on the beach? Who's responsible for making sure that that individual doesn't, wander around through the community and make sure that they get whatever medical care they may need, or that they're not a free agent? I could go on, but I'll stop now and wait for questions.
Yeah, thank you, Fritz. I think that's one of the common things here is that, we've all been working really hard on this and working about ways to, control the COVID-19 virus in our region. And one of the reasons for the broadcast here today was to make sure that we're not operating in silos, and of course we're spreading the word and communicating with each other. I had basically the exact same question here in a meeting a week ago. What happens if someone lands on the beach in Igigik or Pilot Point, and if there's no healthcare available, then what? And so all of us communicating with each other right now is important in figuring out that strategy. So along with that, of course, I'm the manager for the Lake and Peninsula Borough. We've got processors online here that span the entire Bristol Bay region from Bristol Bay north to south in Chignix, and we've got Shannon Carroll with Trident online here. So I'd like to give Shannon a stab at explaining how they're approaching this. And they've got an umbrella policy with all of their facilities across the state, and they've done a great job of communicating with us and making sure that there's a plan in place. And so I'd like to offer Shannon the table here to explain to us a little bit about what they've got going on.
Yeah, thank you. So I do just want to really thank you for the opportunity to participate. For us, for Trident, the health and safety of our communities, employees, and fishermen is definitely the top priority. And open communication is definitely a key element in that. So I'm really pleased that the Lake and Penn Borough organized this broadcast and happy to participate. I'll try to be brief today. I do just want to hit on three topics, which is our, you know, Trident's community workforce and protection plan, the catcher vessel mandate, and then our ongoing priorities from a statewide level. So with respect to our plans, like other critical infrastructure businesses, we submitted a community workforce and protection plan to the state. That plan was reviewed and recently approved by the state, and it was shared with local emergency operations centers. I would also note that our plans have been public for some time, and they are currently available on the Bristol Bay Borough website. So if you haven't had a chance to take a look at that, please do so. I'll go into a few details about some of the highlights from the plan, but I first wanted to note two things, and that's well, these plans have been approved by the state. We're going to continue to update and adapt these plans, making sure that they're in line with changing best practices, on-the-ground health conditions, and testing technology and availability. So in that sense, they are a living document. And then second, we really welcome feedback on these plans. We've been participating in multiple weekly calls with community stakeholders from the region, and we have received input from individuals and some of the tribes. But if there's others out there that have specific feedback, please reach out, because I think that's really important. With respect to our plan, a few highlights. This is by no means an exhaustive list, but a few of the highlights that's included. A 14-day quarantine in Anchorage. And that quarantine's monitored. We are going to now we're going to test near the end of the quarantine prior to departure to the region, and then we'll have a chartered flight to the region where the basically there's no opportunity for cross contamination going through public spaces. So everything from the transportation from the hotel to the flight to the plant is all going to be coordinated through Trident. So there's no cross contamination. At the facility, we're going to have daily health and temperature screenings. It's going to be a closed campus, and only designated and trained runners are going to be allowed to leave. And that will be strictly enforced in a condition of employment. We will have, like other processors, a nurse practitioner at the facility to provide on-site medical care. We're going to have protocols that have already been sent out to the fleet for fishermen to minimize interaction, for example, remaining on the vessel during deliveries. Then we've also reduced staffing to lessen crowding. And then the plans also go through protocols for increased hygiene, sanitization, health and safety, and then protocols for ill employees. With respect to the fleet mandate, as Commissioner Crum noted, the state released Health Mandate 17 last week, and we're really supportive of this mandate. I think it helps provide clarity and uniformity to a pretty diverse fleet, and the state worked really hard with stakeholders and I think came up with a document that works for a variety of fleets across the state. So really well done there. We provided outreach to our fleet as to what's required, things to think about prior to leaving for the bay. And then we've also taken steps to figure out what we can do to assist the fleet with compliance. A couple of those include assisting the fleet with direct charters from Seattle to King Salmon, providing transportation to the airport, from the airport to the crew members' quarantine location, and then providing delivery services for groceries and parts and things like that, so they don't have to venture into town. And then lastly, I just wanted to note that we continue to advocate at the state level for additional in-region infrastructure, an assessment of medical support capacity, prioritization of test kits, and funding for monitoring and compliance tools. And it's really great to hear the state's being really proactive on these issues, and we appreciate the work of Commissioner Crum and others on this. And then it does seem, lastly, I'll just note that it seems promising that there's CARES Act funding dedicated to helping regions address some of these needs, and hopefully that can be a big part of the solution here. So thank you again for the opportunity to speak, and I'll stand by for questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Thank you, Shannon. Much appreciated. A couple of analogies that you've made and past folks here with Fritz and yourself is this is fast moving, fluid, and something that we're, you know, trying to stay ahead of. We could use the other analogy that this is the Mardi Gras of the Bristol Bay region every year, and it is very much so a massive gathering, and I think a good analogy. So as well as Trident, we've got Silver Bay online, and Abby Frederick is online to represent Silver Bay. So Abby, take it away.
Good morning, and I appreciate the opportunity to participate. Again, my name is Abby Frederick, and I'm representing Silver Bay Seafood. So about 2 months ago, Silver Bay established a COVID-19 task force, and we became laser-focused on developing a robust plan to protect our workforce in Alaska communities. Through the development of the plan that we have now, we've engaged with healthcare professionals, local, state, federal leaders, other processors, and you'll probably note that a lot of the things that we'll present today may sound a little redundant, but we're all coming up with very consistent ways of dealing with this issue amongst all the processors in the region. We've also been working with fishermen and trade organizations. We developed a community and workforce protection plan, submitted to the state of Alaska and shared with communities, which, you know, they are posted publicly. And the state approved our plan, and we received meaningful input from the community partners. So we really appreciate working on that with you guys. We're committed to continuing to adapt the plan as the information and guidance comes out. The current version that we have is 54 pages long, so I'll touch on the key protective measures that we have in there. We have pre-travel screening and 14-day quarantine before bringing workers into Alaska. We're utilizing private charter flights to limit interactions with the general public when traveling into King Salmon. Our charter flights will be met by Silver Bay personnel who will escort workers directly to Silver Bay facilities with no stops. Our transport vehicles will be disinfected regularly. We're going to have closed lockdown campuses. No employees will be allowed to leave, and visitor traffic will be highly restricted to essential personnel, such as ADF&G or the troopers or medical professionals, for example. Continued daily health monitoring of our workers at Silver Bay facilities will happen at the start of their work shift. On-site nurse practitioner has been secured to provide medical care for our employees to minimize any interaction with the local healthcare professionals. We have increased sanitation of our facilities that follow CDC guidelines. Use of facial masks by all personnel will be required when they are not in their living quarters. Social distancing will be practiced at all feasible times, including during breaks and meal periods, which will be staggered to reduce the number of workers congregating at those times. We'll have trained runners. These are personnel dedicated to retrieving freight and supplies for delivery to our plant, and they will be isolated from the rest of our workforce to control that limited contact we're going to have with the community. And this is a protective measure that we think is going to really help not only protect our workforce, but also just really limit that contact with the community. For security, we're planning on having staff monitor the perimeter of our campus to ensure that workers do not wander into town, and we look forward to working with the state on security measures mentioned by Commissioner Crum. Silver Bay is committed to ensuring implementation of our COVID-19 protocols through clear communication, training, and enforcement. Penalties for noncompliance will include immediate termination and evacuation from the local community. We're going to continue to work closely and have regular communication with the community, and we've right now been providing our contact information and establishing the types of communications that are going to be needed by the community through the Emergency Operations Center team, and as well as healthcare professionals as a part of that team. We're looking forward to partnering with the state and local healthcare professionals as updated testing guidance and resources evolve. This week, Silver Bay hosted 5 informational webinars for our Silver Bay Seafoods fishing fleets regarding State Health Mandate 17. It's been extremely well received by Silver Bay and our fishermen, and we've just really been focusing on that education and outreach so folks know exactly what to do to prepare before they get out there fishing and what to expect once they're, you know, positioned on their vessels. We've also provided several services aimed at supporting their efforts to implement these community workforce protective plans. While this year will not really be business as usual, we are proud to be considered essential workforce and we take that responsibility of food processors very seriously. We're ready to operate in a way that maximizes community and workforce protection. I guess I'll stand by for any other questions you guys might have.
Well, thank you so much, Abby, for sharing that. And we are also having present here today Julianne Curry with Icicle Seafoods. And we've, of course, got more than one Icicle plant in the Bay. And I've been in contact with Julianne and the crew down in Agagic, and like to hear what you've got to say about what your plans are for the summer and how we're going to move forward in this current situation. Thank you.
Hey, Nathan, and thanks to everybody for all the coordinating and the hard work to make this call-in show happen. It's great for us to all get together here and share information. My name is Julianne Curry, and I handle public affairs for Icicle Seafoods. Also on the line, we have John Woodruff, who is our COO, and also waiting in the wings to answer any processor-related questions is Nicole Kimball of the Pacific Seafood Processors Association. So seafood has been deemed a critical industry both by the federal government and the state of Alaska, and Icicle is really proud to continue to supply the world with sustainable seafood from Alaska. Icicle remains completely committed to the health and safety and well-being of our employees, our fishermen, and most importantly, we remain committed to the communities that we operate in. We have a responsibility to keep our communities safe, and we take that responsibility seriously. We have strengthened our existing plans and protocols to respond to the COVID-19 global pandemic so we can continue our important role as a food producer. Once COVID started to spread, we formed a company task force aimed at internal and external COVID prevention and education efforts. We're complying with all state mandates, including the rapidly evolving travel mandates. Under Mandate 10, Icicle has submitted a plan to the state which seeks to protect workers, the communities that we operate in, and the critical infrastructure that the seafood industry represents. That plan has been accepted by the state, and we are currently revising our plan to include additional information and guidance provided by the state. With the rapidly changing mandates and information, Icicle updates our plans every day, and we're active participants in multiple stakeholder working groups, including two that are specific to Bristol Bay alone. We are engaged in weekly calls with community leaders in both Dillingham and Agagic, where our two processing facilities are located, and we're also communicating with local medical providers. We recognize that Bristol Bay is a unique part of Alaska and that every precaution has to be taken to keep COVID from entering the communities in the first place. We have four facilities that are currently operating in other parts of the state. This includes Petersburg, our flagship plant where I work and where I was born and raised. And I know Petersburg's KFSK is rebroadcasting this presentation for local Bristol Bay fishermen, and we thank them for those efforts. As we work to keep our employees and communities safe in those locations, we gain valuable experience that we are putting to use in Bristol Bay. And our employees are taking this issue incredibly seriously, and they're adapting to the changing policies quickly. We were also part of the commitment letter to Bristol Bay communities, and that was signed by the 10 major processors, including the other two that are on this call right now. All of our incoming employees are subject to our remote worksite screening, additional communicable disease screenings, daily temperature checks, and we're currently doing a test run on testing our workforce prior to traveling to Alaska and then once they arrive in Alaska. We're actively minimizing the number of employees traveling to our facilities and working to reduce employee turnover as much as possible. And we're educating and educating and educating on hygiene and policies. Employees must remain on company properties at all times, except for our authorized runners that are conducting business critical operations off-site. And we're operating as a closed campus. And the penalty for violating that closed campus mandate is that we remove them from the community and they are no longer working for Icicle Seafood. Visitors to Icicle facilities are only business critical. All visitors must complete the necessary paperwork and be approved in advance. And we are beginning to ask our visitors who are there as vendors to provide us with the plans that they supplied to the state. All mess hall and galley operations have been modified to reduce the risk of transmission. We're increasing all of our cleaning and sanitation protocols, as well as our education efforts on enhanced hygiene for all of our employees. And Icicle has space for employees to be isolated in the event of an illness. We've also issued our first set of policies to our fishermen to help make them partners in protecting the community. And we did this prior to the release of Mandate 17 because we're committed to being proactive. We helped sponsor the UFA webinar that was held yesterday on Mandate 17, and we are pushing that information to our fleet. We have increased security measures, and we're looking forward to partnering with the state and the local communities on their efforts to enhance security in the region. We have licensed medical professionals at each of our facilities in Bristol Bay, and we're partners with our communities and the state on community and protection measures. And we're looking forward to solving any issues that come at us, and we're looking forward to doing that together. Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you for that input. And also, the last panelist today online is Tim Sands with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, a well-known name, of course, in the region and the fishing industry. I'd like to hear from you, Tim, on what your analysis is on the upcoming season.
Good morning, Nathan. Thank you very much. Thanks for putting this together. And thanks to KPLG for broadcasting it. To start with, I want to let everybody know that ADF&G offices in Dillingham and King Salmon are open. They are restricted to the number of customers that can come in at one time. So we're trying to encourage everybody to do as much as they can electronically. To that end, we've changed some things about subsistence permits. In Dillingham, if you want a subsistence permit, you can get one by email. The email is karen.brito, that's B-R-I-T-O, at alaska.gov. If you send Karen an email and ask for a subsistence permit in Dillingham, she'll send you one, a fillable PDF form. You can fill it out on your phone, send it back, and then we'll send a completed form back to you. And you can keep it on your phone. You don't have to print it at all. Troopers will accept it in the field if it's on your phone. So that's new, and we worked really hard to make that happen. In NACNAC, if you need a permit for NACNAC for subsistence, they're going to mail them. If you had and returned a permit for NACNAC River for two of the last 3 years, you will get a permit in the mail. And these permits are being mailed out today. If you don't receive a permit in the mail, you can get an email version by calling the King Salmon office, and permits are still available in person at the King Salmon office. Now, if you live in some of the other communities, Togiak, Manicotic, those places have vendors that Subsistence Division has set up, that they've always had, and you can contact your vendor in your local community there. The department is working on getting the subsistence permits into the online store. They haven't completed that yet. That may take a couple weeks. When that is completed, we'll contact KDLG and try and get that word out to people through KDLG. For commercial fishing forms, especially the permit holder agent authorization form, that form used to have to be notarized. We've got that changed so that it no longer requires a notary. This is going to save contact time with processors and with the department. If you need a permit holder agent authorization form for commercial fishing, contact your processor. They can get their part of the form filled out, email it to you, and then you can fill it out your part and email it back to them, and they'll get it to us. If you need district registration forms, they're available online. You can print them out. You can mail them to us. You can email them to us. You can go through your processor. Same with dual drift registration. We're trying to get as much of these forms done digitally as possible. Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission forms, if you need to renew your boat ADF&G number or your permit, go online, get it done now. Don't wait till June and try and come in the office and get us to help you, because you could end up waiting for hours if there's a long line at the office. So just trying to get people to be proactive and take care of as much stuff in advance as possible. For our operations, at this time the department plans to operate all field camps and assessment projects in Bristol Bay. Over the past month, Bristol Bay staff have done extensive planning and have come up with COVID-19 mitigation and response plans for all of our operations in Bristol Bay. Field staff will have limited to no contact with members of the community when deploying to their field site. Please note that all our field projects will be closed campuses this year, and a strict no-visitor policy will be in place for the duration of the summer. So don't try and stop by Wood River Tower or the Nishigek Sonar. Just let our crews do their work. We ask that all members of the public refrain from stopping by any of our field camps this year and limit interactions with our staff while on the river. The department is doing everything we can to ensure that we can fulfill our duties and run field operations this year in a manner that will not bring any additional risk to communities or our staff. The department has and will continue to reach out and discuss our plans with community and tribal leaders as we approach the field season. That's all I have at this time. Nathan, thanks again.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. Much appreciated. And I think the priority here also was to field some questions in the last hour of the show for the public folks. And we're going to take some calls online. But we also did some survey questions that we sent out to folks, and we were able to get a pretty broad spectrum of questions from the public. So I'm going to hand over the mic here to Kate Conley, who is the clerk for the borough, and she's got some of the questions on hand that were asked, and she's going to be directing those towards the folks online here today. So thank you, Kate.
Okay. Hi, I'm Kate Conley, the borough clerk. We requested people to submit questions, so I'm just going to start in. This one sounds like it's going toward the public health side. It's a question is from Janice Chuckwalk in Leadlock, and there were several people that asked about medevacs. So her question is, someone who works in the cannery or fishery needs to be medevaced to Anchorage because of COVID-19. Who will authorize the medevac? And will the fishing industry have to go through our little regional hospital? How many medevac planes and personnel are available? And how many hours can a medevac legally fly in a day or a week? Does somebody from the health community want to take that one?
Yeah, so this is Heidi Hedberg, and I can start, and then I'll turn it over to Mary. And then maybe some of the processing plants want to chime in. So if somebody needs to be medevaced, that's going to be a coordinated call. You know, it's great to include the clinic, which is Mary Swain. And the first call is going to be for private medevac. Once those resources have been exhausted, that's when the request would come into the State Emergency Operations Center, and that's when we would work with our National Guard and or the Coast Guard in order to move those patients. It depends on the question about how long can a pilot fly. It's different for each of those aircrafts. I'm not a pilot, so I'm not able to answer that question. But the planning that has gone into medevacs has been really extensive. So, and it's incredibly robust because living in Alaska, we know that's the main transport for individuals that need that medical support on an aircraft. So again, the canneries would be coordinating with the clinic that call, using private medevac resources. And then following up, once those resources are exhausted, National Guard has a lot of assets in addition to the Coast Guard, and they are prepared and ready to transport positive COVID cases. Mary, did you want to chime in at all?
I would. And Janice, I appreciate this question. So if somebody is called, because you are from Leavon, if somebody in your community were to request a medevac or anybody outside of the NACNIC area that is in the Lake and Penn region south, so the south part of the Lake and Penn region, you would go through your health aid clinic and they would go through the hospital. So yes, you would go through that. It is actually Kanakanak's call as to whether or not they are going to have you go to Dillingham or to Anchorage. So that will be up to them. Our call here, depending on who we're seeing, if there's availability in Dillingham, we'll have that conversation with Dillingham. If there's availability in Anchorage, we'll have that conversation with the patient. It really is a case-by-case basis, and it really is dependent on what services they need and why a medevac is being called. If you're up in the Upper Peninsula, then that would go through South Central Foundation through their health clinics up there. So it could be any of those. And honestly, it will be, just because it's COVID, it's going to be handled just like we have handled medevacs for any other reason. So I hope that answers your question, Janice, and if not, please call me.
Thank you, Heidi and Mary. You know, it's good to know that the Coast Guard and National Guard are going to be involved. I think that's something that a lot of people have asked about.